The House votes to extend the space shuttle era by one mission. Reaction rolls in on the GAO's support of Boeing's protest. And DHS thinks terrorists will land their planes for scanning before setting off their bombs. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, June 20th, 2008. On Wednesday, the U.S. House of Representatives approved a $20 billion NASA spending bill for fiscal 2009 that will extend the shuttle program by one more flight and provides an extra $1 billion to speed up development of the Constellation program that will replace the shuttle. The Associated Press reports the 2.8% spending increase over 2008 would allow NASA to fulfill its commitment to deliver the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer to the International Space Station. NASA pledged to deliver the 7-ton instrument, and 16 nations helped pay the $1.5 billion cost of developing it. Then, NASA backed out of the delivery commitment after the Columbia disaster in 2003. The extra $1 billion to hurry Constellation along addresses concerns from some lawmakers that relying on the Russians for transport needs between the shuttle fleet's retirement in 2010 and the start of Constellation in 2015 will make it appear the U.S. has lost its lead in technology. The White House has promised a veto on any extension of the shuttle program, but the House measure passed 409 to 15. That's way above the two-thirds vote needed to override a veto. The Senate has yet to consider the bill. Reaction is coming in to the Government Accountability Office's decision to recommend the Air Force reconsider its award of the KCX aerial tanker contract to Northrop Grumman. So far, the reactions have been predictable. As ANN reported, the GAO supported Boeing's assertions that the Air Force's math was flawed in computing overall costs for each plane, and also upheld the premise that the evaluations of competing designs didn't follow the bid specs. The Air Force has 60 days to respond and is not bound by the GAO's ruling. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers welcomed the ruling, continuing its spin that the KC-45A is a French-built Airbus, which was chosen over a U.S.-manufactured Boeing 767. Union General Vice President Rich Mikulski says, quote, "The GAO report should be the foundation for reversing this outrageous award without delay," unquote. The Air Force Association says the decision only serves to further postpone the replacement of aging KC-135s. Some of those are approaching 50 years in service. The average age is 47 years. Quote, "The Air Force needs new tankers, and AFA strongly supports that objective. It appears from the report that a further delay is inevitable," unquote. Northrop Grumman's Randy Belote declined to gloat, quote, "We respect the GAO's work in analyzing the Air Force's tanker acquisition process. We continue to believe that Northrop Grumman offered the most modern and capable tanker for our men and women in uniform. We will review the GAO findings before commenting further," unquote. Northrop has plans to break ground June 28th on a facility in Mobile, Alabama, where it plans to perform final completion work on the KC-45A, as well as the Airbus A330-200 freighter. The Department of Homeland Security is moving forward with a plan to scan general aviation aircraft arriving in the U.S. from abroad for nuclear weapons, despite charges it's a waste of time, resources, and focus. USA Today reports teams at Andrews Air Force Base are working to perfect radiological testing procedures for aircraft ranging in size from small piston twins to large jets. So far, they've spent 4 months and $4 million testing radiation screening procedures on aircraft, including a DC-9 and a Gulfstream business jet. Security expert Randall Larson, former professor with the National War College, notes screening on the ground does nothing to stop terrorists from detonating a nuclear device overhead. Quote, "It's not the best return on investment for preventing a mushroom cloud over an American city," unquote. DHS officials agree, but point out that checking planes on foreign soil before they take off for U.S. airspace would involve years of waiting for official agreements and protocol. I guess they should know. Hawker Beechcraft announced the first delivery of its flagship Hawker 4000 super mid-sized business jet on Wednesday to customers Gary and Donna Hall, 1 week after the composite-bodied biz jet received final certification from the FAA. As ANN reported, the Hawker 4000 type and production certificates follow a 10-plus year development process, which included extensive reworking of the initial batch of production planes, even after the FAA issued its first type certificate in 2006. The Hawker 4000 is built of advanced composites. Its fuselage features a 72-inch stand-up cabin that's 77.5 inches wide. A flat floor runs the entire length of the aircraft, leading to a large 88.5 cubic foot baggage area that's accessible during flight through the cabin or on the ground through an exterior door. The aircraft's interior is a standard 8-place configuration with articulating executive seats in double club format. HBC says Hall is a businessman who travels regularly between Joplin and Las Vegas. He and his wife have owned two Beachjet 400As and a Hawker 800 XP, which is their current aircraft. Coming up next, Delta announces more aggressive capacity cuts. Southwest says it's still in growth mode. And authorities identify the pilot who died in a Kentucky accident. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for June 20th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Following in the footsteps of its likely merger partner, Northwest Airlines, on Wednesday, Delta announced plans to more sharply reduce capacity this year, now by as much as 13%. The Dallas Morning News reports the airline blames fuel costs. Delta had announced earlier it planned to trim capacity by 10% in 2008, largely by grounding less efficient aircraft used primarily on less profitable domestic routes. Delta said most of its capacity cuts will focus on routes that both originate and end at non-hub airports for the airline. These include flights between Orlando and Nashville, Las Vegas and Los Angeles, and Boston and Jacksonville. Delta President and CFO Ed Bastian told investors, quote, "Delta has been a first mover to aggressively respond to the challenges facing our industry with domestic capacity cuts, associated cost reductions, and a focus on preserving liquidity," unquote. Delta says it expects to report a profit in the second quarter, excluding special items such as costs related to both its prior bankruptcy and preparations to merge with Northwest. In an economic climate which has the legacy U.S. airlines discussing how much capacity they'll cut this year, the CEO of Southwest Airlines is still predicting 4% growth. The Associated Press reports Gary Kelly qualified his optimism in a talk to investors in New York Wednesday by saying Southwest's growth will be modest through next year, and any expansion could be put on hold if oil prices and the economy remain challenging. Southwest famously adopted a policy years ago of hedging fuel costs by purchasing Jet A years in advance. But the purpose, after all, is to allow the company to remain profitable, not just to accrue smaller losses. Quote, "We know, like everyone knows, that we're going to have to move fares along gradually and continuously to be able to overcome these dramatically higher fuel costs. If we have to slow our growth to zero next year, we're obviously prepared to do that," unquote. Kelly says expansion opportunities will be chosen carefully and will more likely come in the form of increased service in markets such as Denver, where other carriers are cutting back, than in the form of acquisitions of those competitors. Southwest stock closed up another 4.7% on Thursday at $14.80. Authorities have identified the pilot who died Wednesday when his Lancair 4P crashed during an emergency landing attempt near Lexington, Kentucky. 54-year-old Dan Hudson II was returning from Bluegrass Airport to Murray Calloway County Airport after dropping off a passenger when he declared an emergency, telling controllers of an oil pressure problem. He was directed to land at Springfield, Lebanon Airport. Witnesses told WPSD-TV the plane was spiraling like a helicopter as it approached the runway. The aircraft crashed off to the side of the runway and caught fire. Hudson was the owner of Hudson Incorporated, a family-owned business that operates five John Deere tractor dealerships in Kentucky. Associates say he often flew both fixed-wing and rotorcraft on company trips. The pilot of a de Havilland Dash 6 cargo plane died Wednesday when his plane crashed on takeoff from Barnstable Municipal Airport in Massachusetts. FAA spokeswoman Arlene Salick said the accident occurred when the aircraft was about 500 feet down the runway at 10:03 a.m. Eastern Time. Witnesses said the plane was already in the air off runway 24, but rolled to the left and hit the ground. Airport manager Doc Mosby said the plane got about 200 feet in the air. According to the Boston Globe, 43-year-old pilot Mark Conway started flying for Wiggins Airways last December. Wiggins president and CEO Jim Tomford told the paper Conway flew the route from Hyannis to Nantucket twice a day and had over 3,600 hours time since becoming a pilot in 1984. Tomford told the Cape Cod Times the plane, which was the company's only twin otter, had only 200 pounds of cargo on board, small packages for UPS and FedEx, when it went down. The FAA and NTSB were on the scene Thursday. Still ahead, a new prop gives a boost to the legend Cub. UAVs are saving fuel for the Air Force. And expensive airport parking, it's not just for cars anymore. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, June 20th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. American Legend Aircraft Company and its home-built kit offshoot, Texas Sport Aircraft Company, announced on Wednesday the recent certification of a new 72-inch Sensenic composite propeller for the Legend Cub Special Light Sport Aircraft and the Texas Sport Kit Aircraft. The company says the new prop increases performance as much as 10 miles an hour. The prop is ground-adjustable for owners to enhance performance or tune the prop for comfort and efficiency. The prop is a two-blade model designed expressly for experimental and light sport aircraft. Offered as an upgrade from the Legend Cub's standard Sensenic 72x44 wood propeller, the composite version costs $1,895. It's also available to current owners of Continental O200-equipped Legend Cubs and Texas Sport Builders for $2,556. American Legend Aircraft Company manufactures the Legend Cub, Legend Float Cub, Legend Combat, and Legend Cub Special. All are FAA-certified aircraft. The U.S. Armed Forces have embraced unmanned aerial vehicles for a number of reasons. Fuel costs are just the latest. Air Force General John D.W. Corley, commander of Air Combat Command and Air Component Chief for the U.S. Joint Forces Command, told attendees at the 2008 Joint Warfighting Conference in Virginia Beach that UAVs represent, quote, a growth industry. There is an appetite for unmanned aerial systems, and in my mind, I think that will continue unabated, unquote. So far, military UAVs have been used primarily for recon and observation work, but they have occasionally been used for attacks. Corley notes a question asked with increasing frequency is, quote, if we use them as weapons, can we use them as replacements for some of our historic tactical aviation assets, unquote. Corley calls that a question, quote, that we have to embrace both for the relevance in terms of irregular warfare and beyond, unquote. The Air Force says its aircraft fuel costs go up $600 million for every $10 increase in the price of a barrel of oil. Corley says Air Force logisticians are looking at alternative fuels for some aircraft as a viable plan B. He adds that new training and simulator technology may also reduce the amount of fuel used in training. This one figures, as major airlines announce plans to park their older, thirstier jets, Florence Regional Airport officials in South Carolina are promoting their airport as a place to park them. Airport Executive Director Hartzell Rogers says his airport has enough space for about 150 regional jets. He told the Florence Daily News he got the idea during a trip to one famous aviation boneyard. Quote, I was out in Mojave, California a couple years ago, and I'd noticed a lot of airports out there generate revenue by parking planes. I began putting the word out that the space is here, unquote. He notes that South Carolina is much closer to East Coast clients than other airports offering jet parking space out west. He also notes, quote, it's just a way for your friendly local airport director to generate revenue, unquote. Today, 12 Mesa Air Group CRJs are already parked on the ramp at Florence. Rogers says he expects as many as 38 planes there eventually from that single contract and hopes to grow the new source of incremental revenue. And finally, you might think that for a guy who's been in Earth orbit, 29,000 feet would be no big deal. But 16-year NASA astronaut Dr. Scott Perezinski has always wanted to summit Mount Everest. He traveled there this spring to fulfill that goal and to tie off two special memorial flags in honor of fallen astronauts and cosmonauts. The flags were patterned after Tibetan prayer flags that dot the high summits and mountain passes of the Himalayas. In a recent letter to the families of Apollo 1, Challenger, Columbia, Soyuz 1, and Soyuz 11 crews, Perezinski wrote, quote, I couldn't think of a better way to honor my heroes, your beloved family members, than on the apogee of the world's highest mountain, unquote. The Challenger Center for Space Science Foundation says Perezinski made the trip at his own expense and on his own time. He didn't make the summit, but he asked friend and climbing partner Adam Janikowski to do the honor for him. And now these two memorial flags are flying atop of the world, commemorating the fallen astronauts and cosmonauts. That doesn't mean that Perezinski has given up on his personal goal. He had a second set of flags made in case he gets the chance again. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is veteran helicopter instructor and airshow pilot Dennis Kenyon, who started a scholarship program to cover helicopter training costs for aspiring young aviators in England. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.